Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray my Cuisinart to keep. I pray my stocks are on the rise and that my analyst is wise. That all the wine I sip is white and that my hot tub's watertight. That racquetball won't get too tough. That my sushi's fresh enough. I pray my cordless phone still works and that my money market, I messed it up. And that my career won't lose its perks. My microwave won't radiate. My condo won't depreciate. I pray my health club doesn't close and that my money market grows. If I go broke before I wake, I pray my Volvo they don't take. Now that's a funny tongue-in-cheek prayer that represents someone's idea of what's important. Important things in a privileged life. The passage that we're going to look at from Luke this morning forces us to look at our lives and ask ourselves, what's really important in life? See, our scripture tells the story of a man who has plenty. Matter of fact, he has more than plenty, and then what he does with this bountiful blessing that he's been given. So as we continue our series in Luke, we'll be looking at Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, in a message that is titled, What's Really Important in Life? And this passage, it's relevant to us today because most of us in America have made their priority in life the attainment of enough money to live the good life. Side note for a moment. I grew up on Guam. Many of you know that. And the church I grew up in was a predominantly Filipino church. And did you know that the Filipino dream is to make it to America and to live that American lifestyle? And Guam was a stepping stone for that. So they would leave the Philippines to get to Guam so they could get their citizenship and then make it to the United States to live that American dream. A lot of people want to do that. This country is a blessed country with one of the highest living standards in the entire world. The life that most of us live here in America is far beyond most others. Listen to some of these. If you have an education and you know how to read, then you are more blessed than over 2 billion people in the world that cannot read anything at all. If you woke up this morning with more health than illness, you are more blessed than the 1 million people who will not survive this week. If you have food in your refrigerator, clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and a place to sleep, then you are richer than 75% of this world. If you have money in the bank, in your wallet, spare change in a dish, or maybe in your car, then you are among the top 8% of the world's wealthy. If you can attend a church meeting without fear of harassment, arrest, torture, or death, you are more blessed than over 3 billion people in the world. Now, it's amazing how humbling this realization is. To know that the poorest of us in this room this morning are richer than most of the rest of the world, and yet do we have enough? We sit and we watch programs on TV like The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Do you want to be a millionaire? Fabulous Wealthy Hideaways? Today we're bombarded by advertisements showing us something bigger, something better, something new and improved, and we want to go out and get it. You see, in our American society today, the distance between comfortable and covetous may not be all that great. You see, and that's what Jesus was trying to point out in the scripture that we're going to go through today. When does having possessions become a sin? A sin that needs to be reckoned with. So in the passage that we'll be reading, we find Jesus sitting and teaching his disciples, and then also sitting with them and out in the crowd were many people who were just listening to him teach. He's trying to teach the disciples, if you remember from the past several weeks, to fear God and God alone. When all of a sudden, he is interrupted by a man who was not trying to learn anything that Jesus was teaching, but he was adamant about his own problem. He blurts out and he asks Jesus this question. He says, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." I'm sure that Jesus stopped what he was teaching. And he looked over at this man, and then he replies, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" See, Jesus here, he refused to be sidetracked from the mission of seeking and saving the lost. He looked at this man and he saw the problem wasn't dividing the inheritance, but it was one of greed. Jesus saw that not only did this man have a problem with greed, but so did the man's brother. Jesus knew that no settlement would be satisfactory until both of the brothers had a change of heart. A change of heart. See, that is what made Jesus' teaching different. He knew that everything that comes from man starts in the heart. So we find Jesus saying in Mark chapter 7, "What comes out of a person is what defiles them. For it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person." What Jesus saw coming out of this man was greed. And so he begins to teach about the sin of greed. And he does it through a parable of a rich man. Now, after the readings and things that I've done, I don't believe that Jesus had a problem with the man having possessions or even being wealthy. See, Jesus was concerned with the man's heart. Where is your heart? Is your heart turned toward getting more and more of what you already have? Or is your heart bent on loving and giving where it is needed? Proverbs chapter 21, verse 26 speaks to that very point, and it says, "All day long he craves for more, but the righteous give without sparing." Now, Charles Swindoll has pictured it this way. He says, imagine a shipwrecked sailor on a lifeboat in the middle of the ocean. His terrible thirst impels him to drink the salt water. But that salt water only makes him thirstier, which causes him to drink even more salt water, which makes him even thirstier. And he consumes more and more of that salty water until, paradoxically, he actually becomes dehydrated and dies. See, that illustrates that a heart bent on acquiring more and more of any earthly possession is a dead end. Our text continues at verse 15, it says, "Then he said to them, 'Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions.'" And yet greed, it tries to convince us of just the opposite, doesn't it? So then starting at verse 16, Jesus gives us five principles of what happens when our heart begins to focus exclusively on ourselves. And we become greedy. So the first principle. When we focus on ourselves, we do not give God the credit for the things he has done. Verse 16 says, "And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest." Jesus spoke of a man who was rich. A man who had honestly earned what he possessed. Jesus didn't have a problem with the man owning the stuff, but Jesus was speaking of a man who was leaving God out of the picture. He was speaking of a man who was saying to himself, "Look what I have done. Look at what my fields have yielded. Look at me and my wonderful problem." But where was God in this picture? The fact that this man was a steward over all that God had given him? The fact that God had blessed him with a good crop that was free of blight and disease. The fact that God had blessed him with such an abundance that his cup was overflowing. His barns could no longer hold all that God had given him. And yet this man was not giving God any credit for these things that God had done for him. The second principle. When we focus on ourselves, We make plans, but we leave God out. Verse 17, he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. There was nothing wrong with this man's desire to build more barns. Matter of fact, it was probably a good and a prudent idea. The problem was in the fact that there was not any thought of sharing his abundance with others. It's interesting to note that in this parable, the personal pronoun my, it occurs 4 times, and I occurs 5 times. The rich man says, my crops, my barns, my goods. There is no thought to putting God into his life. In all of his plans, he has left God out. Third principle. When we focus on ourselves, we consider spending our resources only on ourselves. Verse 19, he continues and says, I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. In this verse, the rich man is talking to himself and assessing his plan, his future and physical well-being. The man has this plan that he's putting into action, things that would cover for the next several years to come. He's convinced that his future would continually expand under his control. Nothing could have been further from the truth. He was beginning to show these traits of being a fool. In the book of James, it speaks about a rich man's attitude. In James chapter 4, starting at verse 13, it says, now listen, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live to do this or to do that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes, and all such boasting is evil. One of the most dangerous words in our language today is tomorrow. When we speak of the future, we should say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live to do this or to do that. See, the Bible, it does not discourage us from looking to the future. However, as we make our plans, whether it's in business or in relationships or even in our personal lives, we are to do so from the perspective that ultimately God is the one who is in charge. With this in mind, we should plan with a humble heart, knowing that God is with us to help us, to strengthen us. In all that we do, he's there to lead us and to guide us. The fourth principle. When our hearts are focused on ourselves, we store up our treasures in the wrong places. But God said to him at verse 20, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? See, God is calling this rich man a fool. In Scripture, a fool is one who leaves God out of any consideration. Psalm chapter 14, verse 1 says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. A man becomes a fool when he begins to think that all that he has, all that he is, all that he's accomplished, that all of his possessions are because of his doing. When we leave God out of our lives, the 7 deadly sins are inevitable. And one of those deadly sins is greed. But as I said earlier, I don't think Jesus had a problem with us owning possessions. See, that's one way that God blesses us. He blesses us by providing for us, giving to us. It is how we think about our possessions that make the difference. See, it's very hard to not become emotionally attached to some of our things, especially things that we've worked so hard for. Finally, the fifth principle. When we focus on ourselves, we will find ourselves in conflict with God's plan for our lives. 21, our last verse for this morning, says, "This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." See, riches, they have one major weakness. They have no purchasing power after death. All of our earthly riches will do us no good once all we own is a 6-foot plot of ground. That was mine, Mark. Unless our riches are used to help others. Unless we use our abundance to bring others to the belief that giving is better than getting. That God blesses the giver and places treasures in his house for the righteous person. Until we can come to that realization, we have not brought God into our lives. We have not opened our eyes to what Jesus taught. And we are not living the Christian way. See, we started out this morning looking at our many earthly riches and then discussing how Jesus told this parable of a rich man. And as we think about what's really important in life, it all seems to boil down to two options for us. Do you want a life that is dependent on things of this world? Or do you want to live a life knowing there are no guarantees of permanence in this life, but knowing that treasures await you in heaven, knowing that you have a bond with our God and our Creator? Now, there is no escaping the fact that we are a part of this world. But that shouldn't stop us from realizing that we're also a part of God's great universe. And even though we are immersed in the cares and the concerns of this life on a daily basis, that shouldn't keep us from knowing that this life and everything in it that was given to us was done so by a loving and a caring Father who wants to provide for us and to watch out for us. So our decision, it comes down to a very simple question. And I want to close with this, something for you to think about, to ponder. Are you going to live for yourself or for God?